The 630 Chad Afternoon News with Jalen Nye and Andrew Gross. Weekdays at 2 on 630 Chad.
Capital.com.
Engaging conversation with Jalen Nye and Andrew Gross. Breaking news with Eileen Bell and sports with Morley Scott. This is the Afternoon News on 630 Chad, Edmonton's breaking news and conversation station.
Wanted to talk about Bitcoin today. It is on one heck of a roll. This time, 3 years ago, one Bitcoin was worth about $400. Now, earlier this year, like at the start of this year, one Bitcoin, I think, was worth just over $1,000. As of 2 p.m. this afternoon, one Bitcoin equals just over 15,000 Canadian dollars. Wow. So what is it? Is it the wave of the future? And where does it go from here? Joining us to answer some questions, Mike Brown, the Director of Innovation with ATB's Financial Transformation Team. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Julian. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Now, what does a Director of Innovation with the Financial Transformation Team do?
get to look to the future.
Look to the future, and so this is perfect in this case. So when did you start paying attention to Bitcoin?
ATB overall has been looking at, you know, cryptocurrencies and blockchain for about 4 or 5 years. More seriously, about a year and a half ago, we used, you know, blockchain technology to do a test of it, and we sent $1,000 to Germany. It took about 10 seconds to complete.
Wow. Wow. So what can you explain for those who don't know? And because it can be a little confusing. My kid who lives in Tokyo has some Bitcoin stuff, and he's been up to his eyeballs in this for the past couple of months. And he tried to explain it to me and his dad one night, and it was like he was talking Greek. When you're talking about Bitcoin and blockchain, how does this work? What is blockchain, and how does this Bitcoin work?
I'll try not to speak Greek.
Thank you.
So Bitcoin overall was originally proposed back in 2009, and its first transactions were shortly after that. So it's been around for, you know, 7 or almost 8 years, and really it's a digital currency, and it really solved a problem that people have been trying to solve for years, which was, you know, how do you send funds through the internet and avoid the potential of a double spend where somebody has funds and they spend it twice. So Bitcoin overcomes that with its underlying technology called blockchain.
Okay.
And basically it's this public ledger across the internet of all transactions.
That's what blockchain is.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about mining and trying to get a Bitcoin, like how would one go about getting a Bitcoin or a portion of a Bitcoin?
Yeah, so there's several different companies out there that, you know, are cryptocurrency or Bitcoin exchanges or wallets, and you can basically go on with your credit card or bank account and, you know, use your Canadian dollars to buy Bitcoin. The actual mining piece is separate. The miners are the ones who actually run the servers around the world that actually make the Bitcoin network happen.
Oh, okay.
So they're sitting there every 10 minutes, sitting there doing heavy computational work to make it run.
So if I wanted to this afternoon, let's say, get a portion of a Bitcoin, and if I went through the proper channels and, you know, all that sort of stuff, would there be a Bitcoin there for me?
Yeah, so there's, so if you go through exchanges, you can purchase it. Sometimes, you know, the general expectation with Bitcoin is that every transaction is finalized within 10 minutes.
Wow.
That's kind of the frequency. But due to the popularity, the Bitcoin network itself has kind of a throughput constraint, and sometimes it can take hours or, you know, even a couple of days to have transactions go through.
Interesting. You know, I think a couple of years ago when we first started talking about this on the show, there was someone who started a Bitcoin company, actually, I think from Edmonton. He came on and he was going to give me a portion of one, and he said, just follow all of this, and I never followed through on it. I think I'm kicking myself in the butt now with this one. What is fueling the growth, Mike?
Yeah, so Bitcoin has kind of, you know, evolved a bit. It's definitely a proof of concept, so it's kind of demonstrated that this is real. I forget the exact number, but there's a couple $100 billion worth of funds out there in cryptocurrency, and, you know, it really demonstrates that the system does work, that it is kind of unhackable. So that part is proven. People thought it would be used more for kind of day-to-day transactions, like there's coffee shops in Alberta. You can actually buy a coffee with Bitcoin. And you know, there's online retailers that let you purchase with Bitcoin. But that part, I think, is kind of fading away because the speculation around Bitcoin and its value. So what's happening now is Bitcoin's really being used for, you know, speculative investing. So people are hoping that it's going to keep going up, and they just keep buying some with the expectation that it's going to go somewhere. So they wouldn't bother buying a coffee today for $5 because tomorrow that might be worth $10 or $20.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of changed its purpose.
And so, and I don't know if you can answer this, but in your opinion, with the way that you're watching, because I'm reading articles today, because we've seen over the past few weeks, especially, there's been big jumps and there's been a correction and then it goes up again and a correction and goes up again. And there was talk again today about, you know, the corrections in it and in bringing it back down. Is it worth what it's at right now, or do you believe that there's going to be more corrections to it? Can you answer that?
I can't really answer it. It's, like I said, it's very speculative. There's really the challenge with it is there's no underlying, you know, economic model.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's got a very strong economic model in that the mining produces new Bitcoin, and you know that drives, you know, helps drive the value. But there's no fundamentals. You can't sit there and look at, you know, earnings or you know, commodity and how popular that commodity is. There's nothing really underlying it. So, you know, everybody that's buying it is buying it based on speculation and hope that it goes up tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there was a news report yesterday or today talking about, hey, meet Bitcoin's latest billionaires, you know, the folks that got in, I think, early. Someone just texted in, Mike, and I don't know if you can answer this question I'm going to ask you. Says, what's to stop someone from starting another arbitrary financial product? I guess nothing, really.
Yeah, so that's where cryptocurrencies. So there's, you know, last I read, there's probably over 800 different cryptocurrencies, and it's probably over 1,000 now. Bitcoin is by far the biggest. And then there's another one that's next in line is called Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
But there are literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different cryptocurrencies where people are creating them, hoping that they can, you know, create a value system and support, you know, different transactions and different models. The challenge is, you know, we have a, you know, traditional system, the way we run our governments, the way we have taxation, we have all these different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, the overall regulatory market hasn't kind of caught up with these cryptocurrencies. And I was just reading today, like on, you know, CRA's website, for example, you know, you're supposed to report gains from cryptocurrency. So, you know, but who's going to issue that?
Yeah.
Slip for you.
Interesting. Yeah, the regulatory market, I think you start to wonder if they even know what to do. I know there was again another article I was reading today about having to, again, it was reporting something but to do with Bitcoin, but as you said, it's like, yeah, who's going to do that? This text came in from Smoky Lake, says, so is Bitcoin a stock or a storage of money?
It's more a storage of value. But again, that value can go from, you know, $15,000 today to zero tomorrow if there's some, you know, there's corrections that do happen due to things like the Chinese government, you know, making some statement about cryptocurrencies. They can, you know, can have a major impact. There was, back in August of last year, or this year, there was a fork, which is kind of a technical change that happens to the network.
Uh-huh.
And people don't know what the overall implication is going to be when that happens. So, yeah, really, it's a storage of value. It's not, it's easy to send, once you have money into Bitcoin, it's easy to send that money to somebody around the world and they can receive it, assuming the system's running effectively, you know, within 10 minutes. But, you know, for example, one of the U.S. providers, they'll take credit card to put your money into your Bitcoin wallet, but they charge 4% to get it in. So right off the gate, you're paying 4% to get in, and then depending on how you get the money out, again, there could be, you know, no fee, or there could be a small fee to get the money out as well. So, you know, it's not completely a, you know, free and open system. There are fees for getting into and out of, and Again, sometimes there are free ones, but maybe they take longer.
Okay. There has been talk over the years about kind of the dark side of Bitcoin and, you know, drug money slushing around, that sort of stuff. Is there any more information that you know on that?
I think it's, you know, that's really what kind of fueled the, you know, the interest early on. I think that's where criminals saw it as an opportunity to, you know, transact effectively, you know, whether it's, you know, around the corner or around the world, and send funds. The basic premise of Bitcoin is that it's anonymous.
Yeah.
So you don't need to provide your, you know, identity, but a lot of, you know, North American, you know, exchanges are now doing proper KYC or know your customer, so they are starting to kind of connect people's identity to their wallets.
Okay.
And the tools and methods are also rapidly evolving. You know, the FBI in the U.S. are now able to kind of connect the dots on transactions. So if there are illegal things happening, they can connect it, but the criminals are also staying a couple steps ahead and finding different ways to hide the trails.
As they do, Mike Brown, Director of Innovation with ATB Financial's Transformation Team, joining us this afternoon. Will Bitcoin, do you believe, have an effect on Canadians and how they do their banking in the coming years, or only if we're a Canadian that decides to get in on it?
I think that the premise and the fundamentals of it will, but it might not be Bitcoin.
Okay.
It might be the underlying technology, and ATB is currently, you know, working on about 5 different projects using the fundamental technology of Bitcoin, but not actually using Bitcoin. So there are a lot of things coming in the next couple of years that will change the way people interact with money and deal with things, but it's not going to be necessarily Bitcoin.
Okay, because, my next question was, how will traditional banking institutions adapt to things like Bitcoin?
Right. And that's the example I gave, where last year we sent those funds over to Germany. And that was a real practical use for banks to do that type of transaction. So those models are evolving. You know, we need to be, you know, sure that they work and that they're secure and comfortable with their operations, and that's the testing that we're doing now.
Okay, very good. Mike Brown joining us this afternoon. I know you can't answer the question, should we be investing in this? I'm sure you'd tell anyone listening is to do your due diligence and do plenty of research on any investment. All right. Mike Brown, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Great. Thanks, Jalen.
All right. Take care now. Mike Brown, the Director of Innovation with ATB's Financials Transformation Team. Bitcoin, huh? Are any of you got in on this Bitcoin thing? And I'm legitimately curious about it. 630-630 if you want to give me a call. 496-0063. As I mentioned, my son was totally into the Bitcoin thing. This is the kid that lives in Tokyo and was kind of riding out that rise. It was like a jump from like 7,000 to 10,000 overnight. It's just been crazy over the past couple of weeks. But then in his mind, it became too volatile and said, I need to get out. He said he wasn't comfortable with, you know, the possibility of losing it all. But yeah, he was in there for quite some time playing around with it. And the gains were pretty, pretty nice. But again, I guess the fall can be pretty huge as well. And again, I remember that guy that was on the show a couple of years ago offering me a piece of Bitcoin. And I never, ever took him up on it. I didn't take him up on it. Hey, Bree, you want to grab that phone call? It's 3:20 on the 6:30 Ched afternoon news. Someone says Bitcoin is terrible for the environment. Somehow I just enjoy the feeling of resting on the cash in the mattress. Who determines the value? Exactly. We'll take a break here, get to some comments and some phone calls after this. Well, we're talking about Bitcoin and trying to understand it, and a lot of you out in Chetville confused by it all as well. There's lots of information on the internet. I was just looking at a website called bitcoin.com. There's lots of stuff out there to read if you want to, if you can wrap your head around it. Number of callers coming in. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm kind of confused, Dave, but that's normal these days.
Yeah, so am I. You know what? You remember a thing called React?
Yeah, I do.
And you know what? And I was a year ago, I was offered the same thing to get into this Bitcoin or the cyber crypto or whatever, and it was like under $1,000. I thought, I don't know. And now it's 15 grand.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
But now I'm thinking, you know what? What about the poor people who get in now? And it's another Briac.
Well, and that's the thing. It's great if you get in early and it takes off. But if you're getting in at whatever it is, yeah, you've got to have the money. You have to have the money to spend.
So, what makes this any different than a pyramid scheme?
I don't have the answer to that, Dave. Don't.
Okay. I'm confused about it. I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, again, that's why I was hoping, Mike was going to be able to shed some more light on it as well. But I'm still pretty confused. Again, like I said, my kid's been in on it, and he's tried to explain it to me. And to him, it's, like, perfectly understandable. But I appreciate the phone call, Dave. Thanks for that. Someone just checked. It says, feel free to check out Bitcoin Solutions. So it's btcsolutions.ca. It's a local company in Edmonton. You can buy. I sell and educate on Bitcoin. So keep in mind that one. Nathan's on the phone. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, I might add to the confusion, although I'm not really sure how I'm adding, but you'll, I mean, that in itself is probably cryptic. But so I worked with a chap a few years ago who does a thing called Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, they're the miners, yeah.
Blew me away. This kid had, he's 25, 26-year-old man, but he had an entire server set up in his home.
Yep.
And all it did 24/7 was scour the internet.
Yeah.
Looking for fractions of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, the only thing I don't understand is how do you get your money back once you buy it?
Well, you can
like, how do you cash in?
You go in, and again, it's all, if I remember correctly, very much it's all password. If you lose that password, you are hooped. It is gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is gone, and there's stories out there of people losing their password and millions of dollars being gone. But when my son told me, he said, no, just went in, got it out, and you send it back to your bank account or whatever it is. You just arrange. It's like a transfer of funds. To me, it kind of, and I could totally be wrong. So when I go to purchase stocks and then cash them back out, and I just say, yep, put it into my bank account, and boom, it's there. There it is.
Fascinating.
Yeah, he makes it sound so easy, but I think the rest of us are very, very confused.
Completely, kind of like a craps table. You know that there's bets being made, money being won. You just don't have to figure it out how yet.
And I'm not the one winning it, Nathan.
Me neither.
Right. Adam, oh, thank you for that call. Adam, who is with Bitcoin Solutions, texting in. And he says, hey, you can sell Bitcoin anytime. We pay cash or check. Yeah, so there's all different ways to check it out. You can read about it. But again, there's different languages, almost like a different language that goes along with it that you have to wrap your head around it. I think we will have to get Adam from Bitcoin on here again in the future and then maybe just really crunch it down with him because I'm still kind of confused. Clear as mud? Clear as mud.
See what we've got online. To save time, you can search by make, model, and price. We have cars, trucks, vans, and SUVs from multiple brands. You can rent, buy, or lease for you, your family, or fleet. Go to drivingforce.ca. Engaging conversation with Jalen Nye and Andrew Gross. Breaking news with Eileen Bell and sports with Morley Scott. This is the Afternoon News on 630 CHED, Edmonton's breaking news and conversation station.
Well, police in Calgary are investigating after a video surfaced of a man delivering a racist rant at a Calgary superstore. It happened Saturday afternoon, was caught on a cell phone by a fellow shopper. That shopper, Steve Lemon, says it started after a clerk scanned an item twice, which appeared to anger the customer, who began yelling racial insults at the cashier. When another person tried to intervene, there were pushes and more slurs. Here's a report from Global Calgary.
None of your business, man. None of your business. And so there, part of what was captured, the incident went on for some period of time. There were also slurs thrown in there repeatedly, I might mention, and a violent push towards one customer who tried to intervene and calm things down. Now, we do have comments from a community activist and also from Steve Lemon, who was so outraged by the incident, he started filming it with his phone to make sure that people know what can happen in our city.
He initiated contact. There was some comments that are not even close to newsworthy comments that were said. After about five or six, the gentleman in line, the next customer, had said, you know, that's enough. At that point, the employee was put behind the manager so the manager could continue to ring out the customer's order. And it didn't stop. He had, at that time, was threatening behind the manager to meet the kid in the parking lot, threatened to rip his chain off his neck and jam it down his throat. There was references to bomb making. There was references to things that are just atrocious.
The fact that this person is not pursuing charges is a huge problem. It speaks to the bigger issue that these racist incidents, these hate crimes, hate incidents are happening again and again and again, and people just don't have the courage to come up and report it. Nobody will hear about it. The police won't have a report. Any of the activist group won't have a report. And it's all because it's almost like, you know, I'm so sick of it, I just want it to go away. But it doesn't go away. It gets more and more and more daring. And that's what we are seeing in this incident in Superstore.
We now know that the man at the center of the video has contacted police. They are meeting today. And we know that incidents like this aren't isolated to Calgary. Edmonton has seen its fair share, including a disgusting verbal attack late last year on our next guest, Jesse Lipscomb. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, how are you, Jesse?
Good. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm guessing you weren't surprised or shocked when you saw this video or this story.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, I always am, because I just have such high standards for humanity in general, and so I'm more just disappointed as I see things like this. But, you know, at the heart of the situation, yeah, of course, it's not shocking. This stuff does happen, and there needs to be things that change in our everyday to start disrupting these types of behaviors so they can stop occurring.
Now, the fellow on the tape did actually kind of pretty much what you suggested to do after the incident involving you. He made it awkward. He stood up. He tried to do something. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes there's some, some misunderstandings of what I mean when we say make it awkward. And there's different ways to make it awkward, but the number one piece is always making sure that you're safe, taking care of yourself and personal safety. But also finding out what are the tools that I can actually intervene in a safe and meaningful way. You know, one of our big ones is, you know, when people are trying to make it awkward in public, what should they do? You know, we as Make It Awkward advise not to actually go up to the attacker. We don't know who these people are or what their mindset is, but that doesn't also mean you just walk away and pretend it didn't happen. One of the things I would suggest is, what you do is you go up to the victim, you befriend the victim, you make that victim understand that they're not alone, because we get our hands tied and it's frozen, and so...
Hey, Jesse, you're a little muffled. Yeah, I'm having troubles hearing you there.
Okay.
There. There, that's better.
How's this sound?
Oh, that's much better. Yes, thank you. Oh,
okay, good. All right, so this, what I would say is, like, you know, oftentimes people feel like, yeah, making it awkward means you go up to the attacker and you confront them. And I don't think that's the thing to do. That's a little bit dangerous, because you don't know who that person is. But the key is go up to the victim, the person that you see is being braided with these horrible, hateful comments, and let them know they're not alone. Walk them away from the situation. How crazy would it be if this angry man is screaming to nobody? Because we've all left the situation. Mm-hmm. We've taken that person away. They know they're not alone. You know, the cashier is no longer working with them. And, of course, we have police. They're great. You make those phone calls while that's all happening. And, you know, you take the platform away from that person and put it on the person who's being attacked. That's what we would suggest.
You know, it's interesting in cases like this one. You know, I think you probably saw a Facebook post of mine the other day that says, "Don't read the comments. Don't read the comments. Don't read the comments."
I know, it's so hard not to.
And you try it on, and then you get sucked in, and you read the comments, and it just kind of kicks you in the gut again. And you know, even today, you went through the same thing when that incident happened with you, and to this day, mm-hmm. people still call it staged, and mm-hmm. that it was fake.
Wait, people still call it staged?
Yeah.
That's, all right, well, interesting. Yeah. Funny, right? You get something on video. First off, I tell you something happens, you're like, I don't believe it. Prove it. Then you prove it on video, and they assume it's staged. By the way, you tell me one actor who would ever play that role, because I don't know who would ever want to be the world's most hated man in Edmonton, but as you were, Jillian.
But, Jesse, did anything, any information ever tracked down about these guys that did that to you?
No, I wasn't interested in that. No. I mean, that was never a thing. It's not an eye for an eye kind of game. At the end of the day, if there was any kind of reach out, I would have loved to have a talk with that person. Because, you know, assuming he was born in Edmonton and I was too, somehow throughout his life, he was conditioned to assume that kind of type of behavior is okay, and I wasn't. How did that happen? What about the disconnect and actually be two humans talking and find out we're not that different? And if we could have done that, imagine how powerful that would have been a year later. Him and I are both talking to a group of people. You know, that's
absolutely
what I would like to see. Yeah.
Well, you know what? The man who videotaped this incident in Calgary says he is getting threats online, being told to delete the video, not to talk to anybody else. Does that surprise you at all?
No, I mean, this is the other thing that I've been noticing as well. Like, sometimes when I try to do the right thing online and help other people's stories, you can't help what the other hundreds of thousands of people are going to say as a result of it. And it's a tricky situation. But it's that idea of just, you know, doing what you know is right. And ideally, you know, the systems are hopefully set up to protect you. And, you know, this online system is so brand new. We're just kind of trying to figure out how do you deal with all of the trolls, how you deal with all of the hate. And it's something that Make It Awkward's actually tackling as we speak.
What do you believe is fueling the hate? I have a number of different ideas because part of me says, you know, that hate has always been there, but now people have different venues to spew it with no repercussions whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's stemming from initially from a lack of actual education about the, you know, plethora of different cultures and races that exist where we live. That's the first piece. And then when you don't know a thing, you might be scared of a thing. And then we have fear there. And then you have all this, you know, whether you call it fake news or just random opinion-based stuff that exists all over social media that might align with your fear. And you latch onto it because it kind of looks familiar. And so now there's misinformation that fits with your fears because of a lack of education. But I think it starts with education.
I think part of it as well, and I'd be curious to know what you think about it. I just was asked not too long ago, a friend of mine was writing, I think, her master's thesis or something for her PhD for a journalism course. And she had asked me about some of the disgusting texts that I've received through work from listeners and about the reasons why I think that they happen and whatnot. I think part of it is, again, over the past number of years, and we've seen people in great power, whether it's at a provincial level, a federal level, a international level, speak to each other or speak to and about other people in ways that we've not seen in public, at least before. And I think when you have people who are leaders, and they could be business leaders, they could be people in media, they could be politicians, when we see that, and no one is standing up to them, nothing's being done about that, it gives some people the belief that it's okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't disagree with you there. I mean, it's always the idea of, you know, representation in what you see. And if you see people who look like you or act like you and it's okay publicly, then, I mean, of course, you start to think this is the lay of the land. Yeah. This is how we are. So I do think there's a special responsibility for people who are in the limelight and have a platform to be held accountable or held to a higher standard, really.
Out of your incident, your Make It Awkward campaign was born and it grew and grew. Is it making a difference, Jesse?
Yeah, without a doubt, it is definitely making a difference. And where I see it, I mean, threefold, really. I see it making a big difference in people asking for how can I help, what is it I can do, whether that's in schools like elementary, junior high, or university, or responses to incidents that happen, whether they're at hospitals or like at nightclubs, and like, what can we do? And so, you know, we'll come in and bring in experts and have some workshops. So it definitely is, but it also gave like a place for people to know that they can have their stories heard. So there's a community where you can just tag hashtag Make It Awkward, and you know there's a community there that will listen and talk and be there to support you, where others might just, you know, scoff it off to it's not a big deal because this is how it is. So it's helping on a number of different levels, and we're trying to grow that.
And, you know, and it's because it must be at times, depending on how often it's happened to a person or who you are, or how long you've been in a city, or maybe it's happened once, maybe it's happened 100 times, but I suspect that you can feel very, very alone.
Yeah, that's exactly one of the main things that I think happens too. I mean, even with myself, and I feel like, you know, I'm pretty progressive and I'm out there trying to make a difference. But even myself, like when it happens, you do feel like you're by yourself. Even if it's in the crowd, you could be at Folk Festival, the busiest place ever, and it's happening, but you feel alone because we don't know how to deal with it. We don't like confrontation as people. So we either turn our backs away from it or somebody gets angry, and both of those things just, they don't really appease the situation. And you leave feeling, A, you didn't say something, and then B, you're like, I should have said something, and I got it. It's just compounds on top of each other. And it's rough.
I want to get to the summit here in just a second, but again, I think it's important that we go back to something that you mentioned earlier about, making it awkward and how to, protect that person who's being attacked. It doesn't, it's not about violence. It's about surrounding and supporting.
It's 100% that. It's not about being a vigilante and trying to, superhero the bigots and racists in the world. But what it's about is human connection, right? And it's that idea that when you're being attacked verbally, you feel alone. And when you know that everybody walking by are not just extras in your own movie, but they're actually there and they're part, it affects them like it affects you, and they care. Like letting a person know you care and you wish this wasn't happening to them and not to worry goes so far for a person. Absolutely. Especially, if you're a visible minority and you don't feel like anyone does, and if someone reaches out and like, don't worry about it, just come, walk away, let's walk together. This is not how the whole world is. This is not how Edmonton, this is not how Calgary is. That is an outlier, right?
Absolutely. Jesse Lipscomb joining us this afternoon. Now, you have a huge event coming up. It's the first ever, and I love this, Make It Awkward Inclusivity Summit 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about this.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it for sure. I mean, what we saw, in the first half of the year, it was a big R&D, research and development. What do people want? So we're just taking as much info as we can. And once we put it together, we thought we'd get the best experts championing different marginalized communities across the world that have been doing it for years and years, and bring them all to Edmonton so that we can all collectively go there and get the tools to understand how to be a better ally, how to be an everyday activist. So we're going to have speakers. We got Sachi Kuhl's coming, Jane Elliott. She's worked with Oprah a ton. Some famous actors, Quentin Aaron, a bunch of people coming through. A lot of mayors, and it's going to be workshops, panels, discussions, a lot of great food, a lot of great music, a comedy show. It's
awesome.
For 3 days. We have a youth summit as well. Just so you know, the youth summit, we got 100 free summit passes for kids age 12 to 18.
Perfect.
All they have to do is send us a video or an essay, and then we'll pick them, the best ones there, which is pretty exciting.
Jesse, the website if people want to find out more?
Absolutely. It's www.miasummit.com. And Jaylen, one thing I want to toss on, because this is like super cool and revolutionary. We just partnered with BHATT.ca, and what we're doing is Make It Awkward aims to clean up social media. We're creating bots that will identify discriminatory language and then artificial learning, learn how to talk to them and give them advice. The trolls are going to be so busy dealing with our bots, they'll have no time to mess with real people.
Oh, Jesse, that's a brilliant idea. Good luck. They've got a lot of work ahead of them.
I agree, but they're robots. They don't get tired.
Take it easy. Just sometimes I think you're a robot too, Jesse. Thank you so much. Take it easy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Jesse Lipscomb joining us this afternoon. Just checking on some of those prices for the Eagles show. A little pricey. Someone's saying today, if it's you're not the original lead singer, then is it just a cover band? Are you going to go see the Eagles? And guess what? You know what? I think I might have some Eagle tickets to give away for you. Not today. Don't call right now. In the next little while. Some of your texts coming in. Oh, Bree's keeping me on my toes in there today. Trevor says, I hope that hate-filled person has an employer who watched the news. And as mentioned, the fellow who went on that tirade meeting with Calgary police today. We'll see what comes out of it. Jeremy in Edmonton says, I think Jesse is wrong. The best way to deal with a bully, which is exactly what that guy was, is to bully the bully. Somebody needs to kick that guy in the face when he spouts off like that. Well, some guy, did, and then he pushed him back pretty tough. This one says, terrorism feeds hate. Someone says, good work, Jesse. Good job. And another one, unfortunately, I don't think this is just a racist issue. I think this guy is so petty and self-centered, so talking about the guy who went on that tirade, that he could have lost it on anybody. And I like this one, too. I think it's okay to fire a customer, and they should have pressed charges. Yeah, they didn't want to press charges. And this text, this violence is crazy. I think it's okay to fire a customer. Have you ever fired someone out of your life? Have you fired, not an employee, but someone who you would use? Maybe you broke up with your hairdresser, which can be awful. Maybe you had to break up with your cleaning lady, or maybe you had to do something like that. It can be very, very difficult, even though someone you know. So just try to think about it. Someone you don't know who's being all weird and violent. In a culture that's been groomed over time, social tolerance and the broken window effect. Social tolerance, I mean, turning a blind eye to the problem. What's tolerated and what's accepted. In this case, verbal threats and so on is accepted because we allow it. Leaving is the right idea. Bullying, threats, harassment occurs not only within the realm of public environment, but it also occurs at the top. Bullying, threats from the very government, public figures. And he goes on to talk about Slave Lake and about the issues that they're having there. He says the broken window effect, the general public sees that it's tolerated, and so monkey see, monkey do. In the last 10 years, Canada's become very intolerant and very violent. Look at the house in Ottawa. Poor examples from our leaders leave the rest to think it's acceptable, and there's no accountability. I'd agree with that one. All right, a quick break here at 4 o'clock news with Eileen Bell coming up on the other side. Dave Campbell in with a look at sports. We'll take a look at your market numbers. And then we'll check in with our friends over at Global Edmonton as well. Stick around.
The 630 CHED Afternoon News with Jaylen Nye and Andrew Gross. Weekdays at 2 on 630 CHED.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.